interview that you missed or that you want to hear again. It's exactly 8:10. We want to remind you that the morning show is not only broadcast over WGTD, but also available as a podcast. To enjoy a different morning show 7 days a week, subscribe to The Morning Show with Greg Berg. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be doing all theater today on this edition of the Morning Show. A little later in the hour, we're going to be talking about one of the great classics of the theatrical stage, Blithe Spirit, that will soon be opening with the Lakeside Players. But part one of today's program is about the Racine Theater Guild's next production, which is of a comedy called Seasonal Allergies. And I just want to add parenthetically that my wife, Kathy, is part of the crew for Seasonal Allergies. And she has been reporting back on what a fun play this is and what a great cast and great production and great director. So I'm quite excited to be talking about this on the morning show. We do have the director with us, Adriana Jones. Adriana Jones, who teaches theater at Carthage and is someone that is, I have suspect, well-known to a lot of you who have taken in theatrical productions here in southeastern Wisconsin. We're also joined by two of the members of the cast, Sam and Kevin Sustacek, husband and wife in real life, husband and wife on the stage in this particular play. And we welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Glad that that we can do this. I want to mention that we are recording this interview via Zoom on early Sunday evening, and I know for a fact that you had a long rehearsal this afternoon, that is Sunday afternoon. Adriana, tell us what had to happen during today's rehearsal and how things went.
So I had a slightly longer rehearsal than the actors. I came in the morning and basically did what we call in the biz a dry tech, where I went through the show with our sound designer as well as our lighting designer and our stage manager to try and work through some of our cues ahead of time with the lights and sound and get a rough shape to all of our tech things before we added the actors into the mix. Because there's a lot actually going on in this show, not necessarily tech-wise, but a lot of props. And those props have proven to be a challenge in terms of the fact that there's a lot of them. But they do add so much to the show as far as the fact that we have to have food on stage as part of our Thanksgiving dinner. But then, you know, you have to have food on stage, which in live theater, it can sometimes be another challenging thing to go through. But today we made it through. We made it through. We got a lot done. And I'll be glad because, I mean, I want to speak highly of both Sam and Kevin because they're on here, but also everyone else in our cast, because I'll be glad whenever we get all these props and food and other things figured out, because then their performances can really shine through. They've been doing a fantastic job. They're all top-notch actors, like professional, really. I continue to say this, even though this is like Racine Theater Guild and volunteers, they are all wonderful and their performances are stellar. So I'm really excited for everyone to see.
Great. You know, I really am glad you said what you did about kind of the challenges of the props and the food and so on, because when we think about tech and tech rehearsals, we're almost always thinking about explosions or are they going to make it rain on stage or, you know, that the kind of special effects that we often think of. And something as seemingly mundane and ordinary as just ordinary plops that kind of clunk around on the stage and food that has to look like it's real food and maybe it is real food and how to deal with all that. So this is maybe like an analog version of high tech and some technical challenges. And of course, we're recording this on Sunday, so you have stretching ahead of you a number of rehearsals to tidy all of these matters up and get this show fully polished. I'm sensing that you're feeling confident.
Yes, I know we will get it done because everybody is just as passionate about making sure we get it done and have an amazing show to put forward. So I know that as a team, we'll do whatever we have to do to make it work in the end.
Great. Speaking of teams, I want to be sure that I ask this of Sam and Kevin Sustacek, and we'll hear more from you as well. But as I mentioned in the introduction, you are husband and wife in this play and husband and wife off stage as well. I know you've been in productions together. Have you portrayed husband and wife on stage before, or is this a first for you?
We have portrayed husband and wife on stage before, but in a more limited capacity. We have a lot more interaction in this show than we did the last time we were husband and wife on stage.
How logistically does that work? I mean, in terms of both of you having major roles in the same production, I mean, who does the dishes and who dog out and so on? I mean, who keeps the house afloat during a period like this?
You may not want to see what our house looks like right now.
We eat late at night a lot.
We do. Yeah. And we both do the house stuff. We both do the theater stuff. We take turns. Yeah. It's a team effort.
Fair enough. On and off the stage. Very good. We're talking with Kevin and Sam Sustacek, who are in the cast of Seasonal Allergies that opens this weekend at the Racine Theater Guild and runs for 3 weekends. And Adriana Jones is the director of this production. Adriana, maybe you could summarize for our listeners the essential plot of Seasonal Allergies.
Sure. So the span of our play spans 3 holidays. We start with Thanksgiving, and then over the course of the show, we transition into Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, and then we end on New Year's with a kind of New Year's Eve party being the last thing we see our characters preparing for. And as we all know, the holidays bring with it all kinds of craziness in the sense that family comes together, and it's sometimes families coming from afar, but it could be an opportunity to see people you haven't seen in a while. But one family member that comes to join Thomas and Julia in their house somewhat unexpectedly is Julia's brother, Pete. And it ends up being a situation where they didn't expect him to come. He kind of canceled last minute and then shows up in somewhat of a state. He's going through a bit of a heartbreak. And his sister and brother-in-law, as well as his friends, Allison and JD, they're all a close-knit friend group, are there to kind of help him through it. But also, they still want to enjoy their holiday time. And his state of being in a breakup is somewhat altering the plans, whether it be altering family traditions or just adding to the overall chaos of enjoying the holiday season together. So all kinds of things ensue in terms of him bringing not only his problem, but a little bit of his mess to the house as he is staying in the house and in their living room for the holiday season, staying over. And yes, they figure it out together. So without giving away all that happens, so the friends, and then there's one other character who is a neighbor who also shows up, Emily. And is a young woman who somewhat takes a liking to Pete, and he has to navigate that as well, the potential for new love in the midst of a breakup. So, in a nutshell, those are things that we see these characters go through over the course of the 3 holidays.
Interesting. So, could we rewind to when it was time to cast this show? And it seems to me that it's an interesting challenge when you have certain people that in the context of the play are related, or in the case of Kevin and Sam's characters are married. So what do you think about or look for in terms of making sure that you are casting people that are going to really feel authentic within these relationships that are part of the play?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, as far as for Kevin and Sam and their real life relationship of being married, I didn't actually know that until when I first was watching their audition. It kind of it came to light a little bit later after we had already started the audition day when they came. And I was looking through the audition cards and I saw the same last name. And I go, "Ooh, wait a minute. Are they related? What's going on here?" And then it came to light in over the course of that night that, yes, they were married. And that made a lot of sense because when I saw them in their audition, they had great chemistry, which I noticed right away. So I already kind of picked them out in my mind as the folks that I was very interested in casting in those roles. And that was before I even knew they were married. So I didn't necessarily go into the audition process aiming to cast a real life married couple. It just kind of worked out that way.
That's lovely. So, Kevin and Sam, tell us about the two characters that you are portraying in Seasonal Allergies and to what extent they feel comparable to who you are versus different in either subtle or even dramatic ways.
Well, I play Julia Shelby. She is a professional chef. She is a very... kind of patient, family-oriented woman. Family means a lot to her. She really cares about harmony in the household. And so she is really patient to a point. But as siblings can do, her brother kind of pushes her over the edge. Julia, actually, it's kind of funny. We've had some conversations about this. Julia is somewhat similar to me. I am certainly not a professional chef, but in that I really care about, I kind of have a tendency to be a peacemaker. Like I want everybody to be happy and I want everybody to be comfortable. And that's kind of what Julia is doing throughout the course of the show.
Very good.
And myself, I play Thomas Shelby. He loves the holiday season. He loves the traditions that are going on throughout the play. And he is a little on the fence. I try to not make him a jerk, but at the same time, he's just trying to fix things. He's trying to make things right and get back to the way that they have always been as far as, you know, happiness. And when things don't go his way, he does throw a little bit of a hissy fit, but it's all coming from a place of love and trying to help everyone. And he's trying to fix it, but his methods don't always work.
So how would you compare the rapport, the marital bond between the Shelbys versus the Sustacheks? I mean, I only ask because if they are portrayed, I mean, obviously they are not you. They are two different people, but there are a lot of ways in which married people relate. And are you able on stage to relate in somewhat the same way the two of you relate in your own real life marriage? Or do you find that their relationship, their connection is different and something that you have to really kind of consciously think about as actors?
I think that the relationship between Thomas and Julia, it is really it's written well, and in so much as he supports her in what she is wanting to do, and she supports him. But in this case, it's like when someone makes a bad choice, they call them out on it, but they're also doing it in a, hey, we got to fix this and move forward and make it better that way. And I think that is, you know, we support each other. We know what each other needs before the other person even knows what they need. And I think that's a way that Julia and Thomas come together.
Sam is smiling and nodding. So does that mean Kevin's making sense here?
I would agree. I think Julia and Thomas are fairly similar to us in the way they relate to each other. We are also not afraid to call each other out when we're doing something dumb. So it is quite similar, actually. Yeah. I hadn't even really thought about that, but yep.
So, Adriana, what have been the challenges for you, aside from the technical stuff, which we'll talk about in just a moment, but otherwise, just in terms of working with these actors and bringing this story alive, what have you worked hardest on in this rehearsal process?
I think making sure that although there are the comedic moments in this, that we don't lose the heart of the show. Like, yes, we've played with fun moments and fun bits, but you know, it's, you got to find that balance, I feel like, in a comedy, of making sure it's not too like slapsticky or campy or yeah, some like that kind of thing. Like, because I do feel that this just small play is, it's somewhat unassuming in the sense that there's really a lot you can take away from it. And I think that was one of my goals going into it, is that these characters felt relatable, they felt real, and that audience members could not only relate to maybe the chaos that is coming across and the comedic moments and fun in the seeing these people navigate the holiday season together, but also could relate to the sometimes sadness that the holidays can bring, depending on where you are in your life. I mean, this isn't necessarily what any of the characters are dealing with at the holidays, but the holidays cannot always be the most fun if someone's perhaps maybe, let's say, dealing with grief, which is another form of loss, right?
Oh, yeah.
Pete's dealing with his loss in terms of a relationship, but there are other forms of loss that people, I think, can hit almost harder at the holidays, because that is a time that we tend to spend together.
Oh, yeah.
Around the people that we love. And if there's someone missing, then you're hit all the harder.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, at the holidays, I think most of us go into the holidays with expectations, conscious or unconscious, about, you know, this is a jolly, merry, happy time.
Yes, exactly. Put on a happy face. Everything should go perfectly.
And it doesn't always.
Yeah. And it doesn't.
So let's talk for just a little bit about the technical matters you touched on, namely that there's a lot of food in this play, and mm-hmm. some of that food gets eaten by your actors, I'm assuming. So first of all, are we just pretending, or do we have actual food being actually eaten on the stage, and how does that work?
Well, I mean, I don't want to say I regretted this choice going out, but when I was in talks with our set designer, Sarah, I think Hunt Frank, for her last name, we were talking about how a big part of what we wanted to do in this show as well is keep it real, so it feels real. And so to keep it real, we had to have real food. At some point, like, because it is not only written in the script that they eat on stage, but also having real food just adds to the realism of the show, right? And you can tell, I feel like, from the audience when you're watching, when actors are eating and for real or when they're not.
Particularly at the Guild, where, you know, there really isn't a bad seat in the house. I mean, nobody is, you know, miles.
Right. It's pretty exposed. A three-quarter thrust, we're pretty exposed up there. So it's like, it's hard to cover, someone eating something on stage in that space. One technical part of that is we had to navigate if someone's actually eating something, our actors, if they have any food allergies. And that was one thing we had to try and figure out, because it's written in the script that they eat shrimp. So that could be a somewhat common food allergy. And it was a food allergy for one of our actors that we had to address. I mean, I guess it's a spoiler here. The shrimp that they're eating on stage is not really shrimp. It's something else.
Your secret is safe with me. glad you're looking out for the health and well-being of your actors. So Kevin and Sam, have you ever eaten on stage in the midst of a performance before, or is this kind of a first for you?
I have, but not to the extent of what this is, minor little bits.
Yeah, I think I have too, but obviously nothing memorable because I have to say, I think I have. I've definitely had to drink things on stage, but yes. This is more. I don't eat a ton on stage, but I did find out today that when you do have to take a big bite of something on stage, you better make sure you have time to chew it and swallow it before you have to say your next line.
Well, honestly, it was so funny though. It was so fun. I didn't even mind. I was like, yeah, great. It was real. That's what we want. We wanted to feel real.
So was today the first day that there was real food being actually eaten?
Yes.
Yeah. For the most part.
Yep. Pretty much. There might have been little things here and there with, I think, more drinks, but as far as the food, yep.
Wow. Very good. And so are we talking about like a Thanksgiving dinner and those kind of fixins? I mean, is that at least part of what gets eaten in this Thanksgiving scene?
Yes. I mean, Sam was being honest in the sense that not all care, it's character dependent, I feel like, as far as, especially with what they're talking about at the dinner table, I feel like some characters are more involved in that conversation than others. So a couple of the characters at the table are busy eating while they continue to chat at Thanksgiving dinner, while others are in the midst of this discovery and large conversation that is had, because Pete also, that's part of when Pete arrives, is in the middle of Thanksgiving dinner. So when he arrives, he shares a bit of news with the family, and that kind of stops us in terms of our eating process for some of the characters.
There you go. So this is obviously one of those, as you said, Adriana, one of those comedies that nevertheless has some seriousness woven into it. And it's a play in which we want real authenticity in terms of these people and their relationships and so on. Is there a particular takeaway from this play? I mean, in a sense, a message, or would that be loading on something a little too heavy on something that's supposed to mostly just be fun?
Well, if you're ever going to ask me, I feel like there's no such thing as too heavy. I'm like, I like stuff. I like doing stuff that pulls at the heartstrings and makes people think and connects with them on a personal level. That's the kind of art that I like to make and that I'm passionate about. So I would say, in terms of a message to take away from this, I feel like the characters all experience, they are forced to let go of something. You brought up that word, expectations. And so all the characters are forced to let go of some form of expectations that they either had for themselves, of like in Pete's case, what he thought a relationship should be. And in the Shelby's case, where what they envisioned their holiday season to be. They all are forced to let go of those expectations in order to move forward together at some point. And I think that is one of the core messages that folks can take away from it, is that, yeah, sure, we can always go into any kind of situation, not just necessarily the holidays, with some form of expectations. But at a certain point, you're going to run up against some obstacles, and you have to be willing to let go of those expectations, at least to an extent, in order to find harmony, find happiness, and, you know, move forward with the people in your life who you love.
Very good. Well said. Adriana, is this your second production that you've directed at the Theater Guild, or you?
This is my very first production I've directed at the Theater Guild. I feel very honored to be welcomed to this family. I've heard about the Theater Guild well before I came onto this scene. It's very well known in this community. And me not being from here, it was one of the first theaters that was mentioned to me as like, oh, check this place out. And so I have nothing but great things to say about all of the team and the volunteers from Racing Theater Guild, as well as the actors, everyone on our crew, as well as the cast members and folks like who are working behind the scenes a little bit, like as far as either board members or our artistic director, Doug and Stennis, and our production stage manager, Jocelyn Fish. Like, everyone has just been so welcoming. And yeah, I feel honored to be able to, after this, say that I have done one. I've directed a production at the Racing Theater Guild. I feel like that's a going to be a big accomplishment for my resume moving forward.
Excellent. Well, we're very, very happy to have you. And Kevin and Sam, have you kept track or have you lost count by now of all of the productions that the two of you have been part of at the Racine Theater Guild?
I just did this for my... like my bio form, but I don't know the number. I've been doing shows at the Theater Guild on and off since 1995, so it's quite a few.
Very good. High point for you. I'm guessing among them would be being Marie in The Sound of Music.
Yeah, I have been very fortunate to have had quite a few roles that that have just been wonderful and kind of bucket list things for me, and that's definitely one of them. This one is a ton of fun. I'm so glad that we were chosen for this cast.
Very good. How about you, Kevin?
I mean, there are some roles that I'm very, very proud of. I loved my role in Mousetrap, as well as, I didn't realize I wanted it, but I loved my role as Mrs. Bumbrake in Peter and the Starcatcher. It was a lot of fun to do, but this one, I mean, it's a fantastic, not fantastical, but a fantastic show to be in. And it allows you to be real, but also be lighthearted enough. And I think that's a lot of fun.
Very good. So we want everybody to be aware of this production of Seasonal Allergies that opens this coming weekend at the Racine Theater Guild and runs for 3 weekends altogether. We encourage people to call 633-4218, area code 262, or go to racinetheater.org for more information. And Adriana Jones, the director of this production, Sam and Kevin Sustacek, two members of the talented cast for Seasonal Allergies, best wishes to all of you, to the rest of the cast, to the large crew, and everyone making Seasonal Allergies possible. And thanks for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And for part two of today's program, we're going to be talking about yet another theatrical production here in southeastern Wisconsin that is about to open up. And it is of one of the great theatrical classics, Noel Coward's Blithe Spirit. And it's a rare treat to be able to see this old gem. And the Lakeside Players are doing it at the Rohde Center for the Arts, opening this weekend and running how many weekends?
2 weekends.
2 weekends. So don't delay in getting your tickets to come see Blithe Spirit. We have the co-directors of the production with us. You just heard the voice of Katie Gordon. And Alex Ebert is her co-director. And they will be joining us to talk about Blithe Spirit and what it's been like to get this production up on its legs and running and ready for the public. We welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming in. We are recording this actually bright and early Tuesday morning, so I know it's a busy week, so thank you for accommodating the schedule and coming in to do this. I think I asked before we went on the air if this is a Lakeside Players directorial debut for either of you, and it actually is for both of you, so...
Yeah, it definitely is. I know I started out with Lakeside last year doing Addams Family as my first show, and I had done theater throughout my life, but this was definitely Alex's first directorial show as well.
Yeah, I have been with the Lakeside Players since Wizard of Oz this past February.
But never as a director.
Never as a director.
So as a performer on the stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, good. Well, since this is your first visit to the morning show, it would be good to learn a little bit about each of you and kind of your theatrical chops, if you will, your theatrical background. And Katie, let's start with you. So first of all, where are you from originally? And as you were growing up, at what point did theater start to... enter the mix.
Yeah, so I'm actually from York, Pennsylvania, and I moved up here about a year and a half ago. So I had a big transition. I was working for a new company. I've loved the Midwest. And I had a lot of good friends up in this area, so I thought I'd give it a shot. And the first thing to find my community was to find a theater. Theater's been huge in my life, and I actually had taken a big step back from it for the past few years while in college and things like that. But I just know that's my people. And I saw that they were holding Adam's Family auditions, and I knew that's the show I wanted to be in. And so I just found Lakeside through that. And I couldn't be more grateful for the people and the friends that I've made there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. How about you, Alex?
So I've actually been wanting to do theater since I was like 11 years old, but I've always been very, very scared that I was going to be terrible at it. So
you kept busy at other things instead?
Or? Yep. I followed the pragmatic mind and did all the things you're supposed to do to make money to pay the bills. But then a friend of mine was assistant directing Wizard of Oz, and she reached out to me and she was like, hey, you should come in and audition for this. And I gave her every excuse in the book. No, I don't have any music. No, I don't know what to do, and blah, blah, blah. And finally, she got me to come in. I got the Cowardly Lion, and I have been off and running ever since. And it is really that moment of I found what I want to be doing.
So, wow, very yeah. good. So when you were 11, what was it about theater that intrigued you, but not enough to actually take the plunge and do it?
Yeah, so I was actually at the Genesee Theater seeing Cats, and I had an aisle seat. And for anybody who's never seen Cats, the very beginning of the show, they turn all the lights in the theater off, and then you just see these light-up cat eyes starting to glow all over the theater. And then the cats start to come down the aisle past you. And when that happened, I was like, oh my gosh, this is magic. And I was like, I want to be part of making this kind of magic for people. But then I did karate for like 20 days and couldn't get past yellow belt because I couldn't remember the moves. And I was like, well, guess I can't dance, so I'm not going to be a...
interesting. Well, here you are. We're glad that somebody prevailed upon you to take the plunge and audition. And as you said, you are off and running. So, Katie, you did a lot of theater. Unlike Alex, you did a lot of theater through school.
Yeah, my family's a big vocal family. So we're like the Sound of Music, but a lot less kids. So there's just been singing and acting throughout my whole life. My parents met doing theater in college, so this has always been something that I've done. And then it kind of just became, I got put on the back burner during school, during kind of figuring out what I wanted to do. And then finding your community is so important, especially when you're at a new place, new state for me. So it was a clear option of what I wanted to do for that. But theater's always been my passion. The people surrounding you are just wonderful. Being able to express yourself in a different way. Singing is my big thing, so being able to do musicals. So this is actually the first play that I've done in a very, very long time.
Oh.
So it's exciting to brush up on my true acting skills, not just vocally, and try something different in this sense.
Right. By the way, what role did you have in the Addams Family?
Yeah, I was Wednesday Addams. So I was
the daughter?
Yeah, she's the daughter. She's the lead in the musical. So I got to play a little goth emo girl, and I was very, very excited.
Wow, that's great. For those of you just joining us, we're talking with Katie Gordon and Alex Ebert, who are co-directors of the next production of The Lakeside Players. And it is of a great classic play called Blithe Spirit by a talented gentleman of many decades ago, Noel Coward. And it's one of those things that if you know a little bit about theater, you know the name, you know the title, but chances are very likely that you've never seen the play because it's one of those classics that for one reason or another does not get performed actually all that often. So it's a rare treat to be able to see this classic. Tell us a little bit about how the invitation came, the opportunity came to actually direct, and for both of you to direct for the very first time. I mean, tell us about kind of the opportunity and what you thought about and how the two of you came together as co-directors.
That definitely was an interesting story. We weren't meant to truly be the directors. We were signing up to be assistant directors. I'm directing Seussical later in the year. So I was like, let's put in my boots to put in assistant director just to get more of the understanding of what it takes. And then I was like, this is a lot of work for me to take on by myself. So I asked Alex to join me and said, can we be co-assistant directors? And then the opportunity just came for us both to become directors in a sense. It would have been better suited for everyone's schedules. And I knew that it was a task that Alex and I definitely did want to take. We definitely were branching into that area. So it was an easy yes from us. And it's nice to have someone that I'm so comfortable and happy to be working with as our partner.
Yeah, that has definitely been the saving grace of this, because we did kind of accidentally fall into the directing category. And so to have somebody next to me who we have very similar senses of humor, we have great work ethic, we make decisions well together, we've given each other some veto power, so we're able to keep each other reined in. But yeah, definitely a great partnership there.
I'm just curious, how did the two of you even know each other so well? Just through Lakeside Players? Were you in something there together?
Wizard of Oz.
Our scarecrow and I was the Cowardly Lion.
I didn't know that you were in the Wizard of Oz as well.
Yeah.
And our assistant stage manager was our Tin Man.
Ah, very good. Wonderful. Well, now that explains that. So talk for a moment. Before we get to Blythe Spear, we need to talk about the story and so on.
Yeah.
But it's one thing to be acting on the stage. It's another thing to be directing. I mean, what does this feel like in terms of taking a leap into a very different sort of role or responsibility?
I think we both were kind of putting in the directorial vibes a little bit more in the past few shows anyway, giving input on scenic direction. Alex has been doing the art for the shows and the actual scene painting for months and months. So that has been something that was in his mindset, seeing the creative side. And I had done a lot of the, I'd say, blocking and the directorial side in that sense before. And I've been a choreographer, I've done those kinds of things. So it was easy to help put those into place a little bit. And that's kind of what brought us into this, knowing what we were going to do.
Yeah. I had a train of thought and then totally left the station.
Why don't you explain, Alex, how you are separating the duties, the various duties of directing, or are you just very much combining your efforts and not compartmentalizing very much?
Yeah, no, we are actually splitting the jobs pretty evenly. As she said, I've kind of taken more the artistic eye. I've been focusing a lot on how the set's going to look, getting the Condamine house set up. We've worked a lot together. The show has a bunch of special effects in it, especially because we're dealing with ghosts.
Right.
So that's where we've really shined as a partnership, is like trying to come up with how we're going to make these fun special effects and make them not obvious special effects.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we've definitely shared. The biggest thing we've had to work on is making the show funny. It is a comedy.
Yeah.
And so that is, again, where our similar senses of humor have come into really handy for us. Mm-hmm. And we do rein each other in, because every once in a while we have an idea where we're like, this would be really funny. And the other one's like, yeah, but maybe not for this one.
Right, right. Well, and you're touching on something, which is that this is a comedy, but it's from many, many years ago. And it's a certain kind of sort of subtle comedy and versus something that's quite broad and farcical, and so it has to be done with a deft touch, and it sounds like you're really trying to do that. So it's time for us to kind of tell our listeners, for the sake of any listeners, and actually might be quite a few listening to this interview who have heard the name Blythe Spirit or heard the name Noel Coward, but might not know very much at all about the actual plot. So
So Blythe Spirit is about this rich couple, both of whom are on their second marriages with each other. And the husband is a writer, and he's trying to get some inspiration for a new story. So he decides to invite a medium over to hold a seance so that he can get some ideas for his character of the homicidal medium in his book. So this medium comes over. They have this little dinner party, and she's quite clearly a fake, except maybe not. Because she inadvertently summons his dead first wife, who proceeds to make his life difficult, we will say, in many, many ways. I won't spoil too much about it. But yeah, it's a tale of two wives.
Yeah, the nagging that goes from just a normal husband and wife, as we all do, very much comes through when you have both of your wives there. One living, one dead. Very exciting.
And so who knows who is aware of the dead wife? Is it just the husband?
Just the husband. Yeah.
So the second wife does not know that she's there.
She sees her, or she's experiencing her. She can't see her, but...
Yeah. So that's where a lot of the comedy has come in, because you have the first wife who likes to mess with the second wife, and the second wife can't see her, so she has to do all her communicating through Charles to her, and it just becomes this almost farcical, like comedy of errors.
Right. And so the second wife eventually knows that the first wife is there, just can't see her.
Right.
So she is fully aware of this other woman is here on some level or in some way.
And at some point in the show, she becomes much more aware, but I won't give away how.
So did the two of you have anything to do with the selection of this play to be part of the Lakeside Player season?
Actually, no. This was brought up before. They were planning on having a play, and this is such a funny one. And it, like you said, it's not done often. So this was produced, getting ready to be brought up, and then they were seeking out directors and assistant directors, and my name got chosen to be an assistant. And then I yanked on Alex's door and said, come on in to help me join. So, yeah, it was definitely a choice that we didn't make, but I'm so, so happy. It is a beast of a show. It is 2.5 hours, and there's only 7 scenes throughout the entire play. And that's a huge amount and so much words, so many things that our cast needs to learn. So it definitely was not an easy task for us to take on as a first-time director, but something that I feel like we're succeeding in so well, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's not a large cast either, right?
No, yeah, only 7 people.
Right. So it's a substantial play, and for those that are in it, most of them have a pretty substantial responsibility. What was it like to be on the other side of the casting table for the first time in your lives? I mean, obviously you've done some theater, so you've been the person auditioning, but to be the person on the other side of the table watching people audition and then making selections for who's going to be in your cast. What kind of a challenge and experience was that?
That definitely was a new one. And something that I'm happy that we took on. It's definitely difficult to be able to decipher through so much talent who's going to be what parts feel the best for people and who maybe won't make it into the show. I do think that we kind of have unanimous ideas for what we wanted, which was very, very lucky. There wasn't a lot of discretion on who we wanted for the parts. It kind of felt like the people that came in were those people for us. They were inhibiting and creating this character already, so it was nice to be able to put them in their places, have them in their roles.
For me, sitting on the other side of the table certainly gave me some perspective on the casting process, because as an actor, you know, it's easy to go, well, I just don't understand why I didn't get this part.
Right.
But now being a director and seeing, well, sometimes it can literally come down to, oh, I liked the inflection this person put in their tone for this one line, and that's what sold me on it. Yeah. So I will definitely take this experience going forward as an actor to auditions and being like, okay, well, maybe it's not necessarily me. It's just because they have, you know, a vision in mind for what story they're trying to tell.
Sure. And so often it comes down to who is right together. I mean,
right.
You might be really good yourself, but you don't quite have the same chemistry with another actor opposite whom you have to play. And so as someone who's listened to a lot of auditions over the years, that's the thing I try to tell people, is that it's not necessarily, it wasn't that you weren't good, but maybe you just weren't right for this particular moment.
The chemistry is so important between the cast, understanding like exactly what you're saying. Are we seeing the loving? Are we seeing like the flirting that a husband and a wife would have? Are we finding those characters acting in that way and those actors coming through with that? So definitely, definitely vital.
Right. We're recording this interview crack of dawn on Tuesday. So that means you are in the throes of your final week, tech week, and so on. So how are things feeling as opening night approaches?
You can definitely feel the stress, but excitement that is bubbling now.
Yeah, we have done a lot of work with promoting the show. So now that we have done the promotion and we are continuing to do the promotion, now we're really cracking down and I'm like, okay, guys, now it's up to you. We got to put on a good show for the butts we're going to put in the seat. And I honestly think our cast is delivering on that. Got a wonderful group of people, so talented. So now it's mostly just the lines like you were speaking of, because there's just so many of them, just getting them in the right order, getting them with the punchlines being hit properly.
The British humor punchlines especially.
Yeah. Right.
Those dry senses of humor.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we set ourselves up pretty good. The set has been done for a few days now, so we're not messing around with that anymore. It's mostly just last minute grabbing props that we don't have yet, or maybe like one or two set pieces. Tweaking makeup so that it looks right under the lights.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, it's fully coming together. I'm running the lights and the sound for the show, and that's something I've never done before. So, that's a whole beast into itself. Alex is running Spotlight. So, these are alongside being with directors and new directors at that, we're having to learn new technology right in the midst of our busiest time. So, it's definitely been fun. Wow. And both of us working the full time jobs, that definitely adds into it.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, again, I'm so glad that you made time for this interview in the midst of all that's going on this week. So, Blythe Spirit opens Friday night and runs for 2 weekends at the Rohde Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha. What do people do if they want to get tickets?
You can actually go onto the website, the Lakeside Players website, or just come in and do a walk-in with us. Our box office will be open.
The website is rohdecenter.org.
And that's R-H-O-D-E.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you can also get tickets for the other shows this season. All of our shows' tickets are on sale. Start with Blythe Spirit.
And then definitely get your tickets for Seussical. I'm not biased or anything.
Right. And I know a good man, Charlie Brown, is in the mix there as well. Yeah. So it's a fun season all around. Oh, well, we're glad that Blythe Spirit is in good shape as it approaches opening night. And it's been great to talk with both of you, Katie Gordon and Alex Ebert, co-directors of Noel Coward's Blythe Spirit. Best wishes to you and your cast and for a successful run of performances. And thanks for being on the morning show today.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow on the morning show, I'll be speaking with Deborah Karp, who is from the University of Wisconsin Parkside, who is the chief organizer of their biannual nonprofit leadership conference, which is coming up in early November. We're going to be talking with her about the importance of this event, and joining us as well will be Beth Ridley, who will be the keynote speaker for the event, which is on Friday, November 17th. On Friday, we'll be talking football, first with Dan Pompey, co-author of a book called The Football 100. The book presents a list of the 100 greatest football players of all time, with illuminating essays about each one. And there are other interesting chapters in this book as well that talk about some of the most important coaches and other players who for various reasons had careers that were very short, but who were brilliant nevertheless. They are called shooting stars. All that and more in this book. Also a look back at the life and careers of Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler, two of college football's greatest coaches, and how they did what they did during the tumultuous era of the Vietnam War. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. We're going to have cloudy skies today and occasional showers with a high temperature of 65 degrees. Rain is in the forecast tonight with the possibility of some severe thunderstorms, possibly even flooding. Overnight low of 59. Rain, including thunderstorms, on Friday and into the weekend. Daytime highs will remain in the 60s through the weekend into early next week. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, in Lake Geneva. NPR.